If you've been feeling the pull to take your teaching outdoors this spring, I want to invite you to join us for our Exploring Nature in Spring Masterclass. This four-week course is part of our seasonal masterclass bundle inside the Outdoor Classrooms Teacher Certification Program. And the best part? When you enroll, you receive all four seasonal courses, spring, summer, autumn, and winter, for one price. Exploring Nature in Spring is the second step in the certification journey, helping educators deepen their observation skills, follow children's curiosity, and bring the vibrant energy of spring into their outdoor classrooms. This course and all of our courses have a live component to each of them. So this course opens virtually on April 1st, and our first live session, because it's 4 weeks, we'll have four live sessions. Our first live session begins April 9th. And if you're new to the program, don't worry. We'll guide you with a special orientation for new students so you can start with confidence. If you're ready to grow your outdoor teaching practice and experience the seasons as your curriculum, you can learn more and join us through the link in the show notes. Come join us. See you soon. If you are a teacher, parent, administrator, student, and/or anyone who loves reconnecting children with nature, and you want to figure out how to cultivate learning gardens and nature-based curriculum, then this is the podcast, the Outdoor Classrooms Podcast. My name is Victoria Hackett. I am the founder of OutdoorClassrooms.com and the Secret Gardens Nature Classes. I love witnessing the magic that happens when children are playfully learning outdoors. Observing the return of wonder and curiosity when children are interacting with nature is pure magic. This is the podcast that is going to help you capture children's interest and give you not only inspiration, but some real life strategies that are going to help you figure out how to use the outdoor space, your outdoor space, as a teaching tool, so you can enlighten the playful learning experience for young children. Welcome to our Outdoor Classrooms community. Today we have a treat. We have Ellen Cochran here. She writes immersive nonfiction for young readers that trusts their intelligence and their emotions. Her debut, Follow the Water, tells a true story of a 17-year-old Julianne Kopecks' survival in the Amazon. It is an adventure that reads like a thriller and teaches how science lives in the world, weather, rivers, canopy, and the choices that keep us alive. A longtime middle school teacher of English, English learners, Spanish, and Russian, Ellen brings classroom clarity and compassion to complex topics. She studied science, writing at Johns Hopkins, and is a certified California naturalist, and previously wrote a syndicated column exploring the natural world. As a teen exchange student, she lived in Lima, Peru, and traveled the same route into the jungle that frames Julianne's story. Ellen lives in Sacramento, where she champions literacy, nature education, and conservation. A portion of the proceeds from Follow the Water supports the Panguna Foundation, and you can find out more information about that at her website, and that will be in the show notes. Without further ado, Ellen Cochran. Hello, everybody. Hello, Ellen. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. Thank you for having me today.
I am absolutely thrilled that you are here, not only for the fact that you have been teaching for 20 plus years in the classroom and integrating nature-based education into that realm, but that you have turned into an author. And we're going to be talking about your latest book today called Follow the Water. Thank you so much for joining us. Can you tell us, before we dive into your book, tell us a little bit about, I know we just did the bio, but Tell us a little bit about your backstory and what led you into, I don't know, even nature-based teaching and moving into being an author.
Absolutely. I had three main interests when I was younger. I enjoyed biology, I liked to write, and I loved languages. I ended up getting a Russian major in college, and it was something that opened a lot of doors for me. I worked over in Russia for a while, and when I came back, I had an eclectic set of skills because I did languages, I did writing, and I really didn't fit in corporate America or in business very well. So I decided to teach, and it was one of the best decisions I ever made. The students I had were wonderful. I ended up teaching English as a second language to students, and high school English, and then middle school English. And then I also taught Russian and Spanish for a while too.
Wow. Wow. So then you moved into writing and becoming an author.
Yes, I, you know, for the young readers out there, I never stopped writing. And one of the most important tools I had was journal writing. Mm-hmm. And if I can segue just a little bit into that for people who might be listening who are journalists, it's so important to keep a journal and to write down your daily events and even write down what people say and your interpretations of it. One of the best pieces of advice I got from my father was enjoy your dreams, occasionally write your nighttime dreams down, but focus your journal on your future dreams and things that are happening today. And I'm so grateful because his advice has served me well as a writer, because I've been able to go back into my journals and relive things that have happened and use them in storytelling.
Oh, wow. That's so powerful. I love that. So your book that you have embarked on, Follow the Water, can you tell us a little bit about why you chose that book and that the stance and the lens that you came to that story with?
Sure. I'll back up a little bit to your first question, too. My teaching career was 20 years, and I still occasionally substitute with pleasure. And I never stopped writing. I wrote articles for magazines, and I helped people with different projects. But when I decided to retire, I reset my career. I went back to school and got a master's degree in science writing. And as part of getting your master's, you have to have a thesis. And back to my journal, when I was 17 years old, I was an exchange student to Peru. And I kept a journal, and I found it during COVID when we were all cleaning out our houses. I found the journal. So I went through it, and I suddenly realized that I had learned about this person, Julianne Kopecky, back then. She had survived one of the most well-documented survival stories of the 20th century. And I could write about her because I could integrate science with what happened to her. And what happened to her was amazing. She was 17 years old, and she survived a mid-plane breakup over the Peruvian Amazon. She fell 2 miles in her seat, crash landed basically through the canopy onto the forest floor in the middle of nowhere. She was the sole survivor, unfortunately. She had been traveling with her mother, so it was a devastating emotional blow. But she pulled herself together, and she walked 11 days out of the jungle to save herself.
Wow.
Yeah, it's just stupefying. I can't imagine myself being able to do anything like that, but she did it. She had tools, and those were the information and the education that her parents gave her, because her parents were research scientists and they had a station in the Amazon. And she would spend many, many, many years in that station learning about the Amazon, what was safe, what wasn't safe, and how to conduct yourself in the jungle. The only other tools she had were one shoe, which survived, and a bag of moldering candy.
Oh, wow. And so you wanted to retell the story, but for young readers.
Yes. This is an oft-told story. Yeah, people will come across it on the internet, or they'll read an article occasionally about it. Who can't resist this survival story? So I knew that it had been told in many different ways, but my background and my experience was with 10 to 16-year-old people. And I thought, this story not only is a great survival story, but it's an opportunity to bring the Amazon flora and fauna alive for kids of this age group. So I approached it like that. I got permission to write in a tone and a language appropriate for that age group for my master's. That was fine. And I just went for it. I told the story, and then I have sidebars throughout the book that explain plants and animals, how she survived, PTSD that she had and the post life that she led, which was also very, very memorable.
So the title of your book is Follow the Water. Do you use that as a metaphor for connection, movement, and responsibility?
The title came from the exact words that her father said before the accident when giving her instruction on how to conduct yourself in the jungle. He said that when you're moving through the jungle, among other things, if you don't know what it is, don't touch it, don't eat it. Look out for snakes because there are many, many poisonous snakes in the Amazon. But if you're lost, Julianne, try and find a source of water. And if you follow the water, eventually it will lead to people and civilization. And so after her stunning first hours, after she came to consciousness on the floor of the jungle, she very carefully started to look around, but she was hearing something and it didn't really filtrate into her consciousness until she paused for a second and it was a small gurgling. And she found a very tiny bubbling stream. And she decided this stream must lead to a rivulet, which must lead to something bigger and eventually a river. So she set out following the water.
Wow. My mind is just going in 50 different directions because it gets me thinking about these even messages that us as parents and adults and educators that we give our children, like just that saying, follow the water, and how that can stay with them throughout their lives. So who knows at what young age that message was given to her. Are there other themes in the book? And I'm saying this out loud because I know a lot of our listeners are early childhood educators that are working with the younger children. But thinking about that and adapting these messages to your young audience, are there any other themes in your book, identity, belonging, and awareness, that are often associated even with adolescence?
Yes, and I'd like to address the first part of your comment too, because as a teacher, or as anyone who works in a school, whether you're in the food line at the cafeteria or if you're a janitor, every point of contact that you have with a student is meaningful. The way you dress, the look on your face, and how you interact with them, and of course, the things you say and teach. So these formative years are so very important. And I always tried to remember that if I lost my temper as a teacher or in other situations. And it served me well to remember that. In the book, there are many messages. One is letting children know that observation is so important. You can maybe not be the best student, but if you just pay attention and you keep your eyes open, both in the classroom and in the world, you will be able to learn and function very well. And I also thought that honesty and storytelling was very important. And it was one of my themes, recounting the survival. You know, Julianne's story is not my story, and I wanted to honor that. The way that I was able to write the story was to gather every piece of information that she ever spoke, said, interviewed, wrote, including she had an autobiography, which was for adults, and I just consumed it all, and then I gave it back for younger people to read. Mm-hmm. And I was very honest and true to her story.
Beautiful. And where do you hope your book lands in terms of in schools, in required reading, in terms of nature? I mean, there's just so much in terms of even nature-based education and all of that. It's just wonderful.
I hope that it lands anywhere where a child who's interested in survival and nature and flora and fauna can get their hands on it. Because I think I know I would have devoured a book like this when I was younger. Yeah. Because I was very interested in the natural world. But even, you know, kids who are more IT oriented or more, you know, social set oriented, I think discovering what a young person can do and what they're capable of is very empowering. And so I'm hoping that schools and the libraries at home schooling, either, you know, buy the paper book or get the Kindle or do the Audible, which, you know, it's a little more economical. And that might be a way to, you know, bring it to your students.
Yeah. So in outdoor classrooms, we find that children can really physically see that cause and effects. How, I guess, do hands-on experiences help children kind of maybe in your book or themes throughout your book understand that ripple effect?
I think cause and effect is, you know, one of the major things that I used to teach when I was a teacher, and in many, many different ways. And in the book, it is clear through many difficult scenarios. The lightning hit her plane, mm-hmm. and the wing fell off, and she fell, but she was saved by the extremely thick canopy and her seat. She landed, she should have died, but the effect of her education helped her survive. It's all throughout the book. Mm. And I just think that, you know, this is a little bit of another deviation from the direct questioning, but one of the things that I really like younger students to get is a loop. Because if you have a loop, you get to see the miniature world around your house. You get to magnify a spider crawling across your wall, and you get to look in deeply into things. And I think that helps open up aspects for children. She was raised as a scientist child. She looked through microscopes. She really understood what the Amazon was like. And she was 17, and she was able to use that knowledge and survive.
Yeah, and maybe even other students seeing themselves in her. I mean, that's just, there's so many parallels. It's just absolutely beautiful. And you speak so well, so I can just imagine that your writing
is thank you.
It's so beautiful as well. So I love, love, love the title, Follow the Water. It approaches responsibility in such a thoughtful and non-alarming way. How can educators who are working with all ages and stages of children, with children, introduce sort of the environmental care and stewardship without creating this sort of fear and overwhelm?
One of the things that's fascinating, I recently wrote an article about young people who have made advancements and strides in science. And initially, you think, well, you know, you need so much education to write a paper. Well, I found out that there are several students and young people across the world who have made significant scientific discoveries and have been parts of papers, have been co-authors on some very interesting scientific discoveries. For kids to understand through, hopefully through Julianne's story, that they are empowered and they can do and see things and interpret things, understand cause and effect, and they can write about it and they can tell what they see, and their voice is valid, is something that was very important for me to weave into the message of the story.
Yeah. So I want to go into the sense of place. And it's truly in your story, the Amazon and learning about the Amazon and everything that sort of goes with that. Can you tell me a little bit more about that and how even outdoor classrooms can provide? I mean, we can't have Amazons outside our door, but just making that link between this book and the sense of place and learning even about a different place. And then maybe, like you said, that making that loop to the sense of place where children who may be reading the book can make.
I'm also trained as a California naturalist, and I've looked at many programs bringing children outdoors. It's really important to have somebody who can guide them, to let them know where they are and what they're seeing. Because myself, if I go someplace new, you look at things, but you don't really understand underneath or the backstory or the trajectory of what's going forward into the future. And this applies to environmental issues. If you have a good leader who can take an outdoor class and talk about surface level, what you see, and then dive deeper into stories and talk about the future and the past, that's very important. When I went through the book, there is actually a break in the story because she survives the ordeal. And then after being raised and lived in the Amazon and spent all her life in Peru, her father decided, because of the kind of untoward publicity that she was getting and harassment, to send her back to Germany, where her parents were from. So she arrived in Germany to a snow-covered white world after being in the Amazon for all these years. And I can't imagine the psychological impact of that, let alone all the other things that she was going through.
Yeah. I mean, it really speaks to the essence of how sense of place affects our mind, body, spirit, you know, all of that. So it's so... And just the ages and stages of wherever we are at in our life journey.
Yeah, I agree with you very much. It's funny. I myself traveled a great deal and worked in many different places, but I actually live one block from where I was born now in the hospital where I was born and grew up in the same neighborhood. So I also sense a place. I think home is really important too. I think, oh, I'm going to have adventures and go place, but I don't want to move. Sometimes you think, oh, that's so cool. I want to move there. But no, I'm going to keep my home base, and then explore the world out of there. And that's an okay feeling too. Sometimes kids are like, oh, I don't want to leave my friends. I don't want to leave my home. Well, keep all of that, but feel free to push out and explore the world too.
Yeah, so important. And I think that message is within your book throughout. So even in your book, it addresses the complex systems and it leaves the readers with hope and agency. How can we translate this into outdoor classrooms and nurturing agency through small, tangible actions?
That's a really tough question. Do you ask everybody that question?
If we all made a little change. But reading your book, even we can translate it with even, the outcome of what you would want a young reader to feel, and what small change could that young reader, after reading this amazing book, what small change could they make? Do you think, do you hope that they would make?
I will answer that, but I want to also tell you something about what Julianne did. When she came back to Germany, she grew up. She went to school. She followed in her parents' footsteps. So she became a bat biologist and then ended up working for a library in Munich. But the main thing that she did was she went to battle for the research station. She, through donations and soliciting from benefactors, she's expanded the acreage. She's protected it from mining and deforestation. And she created a compound that now gathers scientists from all over the world to study what's going on in the Amazon. So her very tumultuous event led to something positive because she had pretty much a singularity of focus. And I think for kids, sometimes things are so overwhelming. What could I do to make a difference? Well, I think focusing on one particular thing for as long as you feel you're doing something is helpful. I have a friend here in the neighborhood. He was a doctor and, did all sorts of things, but he decided one day there's a lot of trash on the street. And so for 6 months, he picked up trash and he made a huge difference in the neighborhood. Finding one thing, focusing on it for as long as you think is appropriate, I think helps people have a sense that I have made a difference. I've talked to people. I've moved the needle a little bit for the way people perceive the world. And I think not stopping to communicate, not stopping to try, those are two very important things.
Such a great answer. I'm like, woohoo, I got goosebumps. What I hear from you and what I'm hearing throughout this whole interview is truly the beauty of your book, Follow the Water, and all the layers and all the lessons and all the stories within the story. So you have this big story that you're sharing, but you're translating it to young people. But even within those stories, like even if adults were reading your story and translating it for even their young people that they're working with, there's just so many stories within the stories and so many different messages. And I love how just you beautifully just tied that bow of the simplicity of picking up trash. You don't have to, have these grandiose experiences, but I love the idea of picking that one thing and not getting overwhelmed, because I think we can go into overwhelm so quickly and easily. So thank you for simplifying it to make it so simple. So if the themes in Follow the Water were intentionally explored throughout outdoor classrooms, or like you said, with homeschoolers, what do you imagine children carrying with them into their adolescence? I guess we touched on this earlier, but if you had anything to expand on that.
There's a reason that survival stories are one of the most popular genre for this age group and beyond. Adults love survival stories too. All you have to do is look at, all the streaming services and the number of survival stories that are on there. But survival, whether it's in nature or some other kind of situation, gives encouragement to people to look at their own life and think, well, maybe I can survive these situations. Kids have so many challenges these days, from interpersonal relationships to grades. But if you can walk out of the Amazon jungle and you have that kind of strength at 17, you might not actually hold that in your mind, you know, when you're facing your urban modern day troubles or family troubles even, but you have it tucked in the quiver and you can know that many people survive many difficult things. And what I'm going through, you know, it'll pass too.
Yeah. Yeah. Such an important message, you know, to stay in the present. And this will pass as well.
Yes.
Yeah. Any other messages, seeds of inspiration, things that we have not necessarily touched upon that you would like to share with our audience?
Well, in the latter part of the book, when Julianne goes back to Germany, she has not really processed her mother's death in the crash. And, you know, a word like process, you know, can be a little bit like new agey, you know. But the truth was, Julianne was one of the first people who ended up writing and going through PTSD in the modern age. We've had many experiences of it in our culture, from shell-shocked to, you know, having people who've been in the army have difficulties or overseas with our modern situations. But this was a young girl who in her own life had a very tragic situation, and she did have PTSD and she didn't know it. And when she got back to Germany, it took about 2 years. And then one Christmas, it just all burst out and she cried for 2 or 3 days. She couldn't stop crying. And she had finally realized, my mother's gone forever. You know, I'm on my own. I must go forward. But she had such a strong character that she experienced it and let it happen. And she had no counseling. She had no review by any kind of doctors mentally telling her or having discussions about what was going on in her brain. But she was able to work through it. But I really thought that was important to talk about in the book, because there are huge problems in the world, like Julianne's, where you have physical problems and imperiled. But in our everyday lives, we also have things that are not good that happen to us. And there is a aftershock for that. And there's a form of PTSD, not to want to get too, you know, wonky about it, but we do have to process the things that happen to us. And so I was really happy to put that in the book to let, you know, readers know, the younger readers, that you can work through things and it might hit you later, but just keep going forward.
Yeah. And I think that nature can provide such a comfort. I don't know the word. I'm kind of lost for words, but nature can act as a comfort. I guess that's, if that makes sense.
I find it so.
I'm like, ah.
No, I think you're spot on. You know, it's the concept of Japanese bathing forest and people saying, oh, I just want to go to the ocean, sit by the ocean. There is something, and I'm sure there are papers written about this, about the healing aspect of nature. I'm not sure why it happens, but what is that term ASMR that people are using now, where if you like something, like you watch a video and it makes you interested, you get like a little tingling in the back of your neck?
Yeah.
That nature does that for so many people. Now, there's some people that you say nature and they go, bugs, no. But I bet they still have a rose garden.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, wow. I could talk to you all day long. This is an amazing, I absolutely love your choice of words for the book. The title, it's brilliant. The message, I hope that we can get many, many young people reading this. Is there any seed of inspiration before we close that you would like to leave on? One seed of inspiration it could be for teachers, leaders, children, parents.
This is for everybody, and I never follow it perfectly in my own life, but be observant. Really listen and watch before you let your mind go into your own thinking or words come out of your mouth, because it is so important to observe things carefully.
Beautiful. I couldn't have said it better.
Now, if I could follow that.
Thank you, Ellen, so much.
Thank you so much.
Before you go, I want to share an invitation. If you are an educator who knows outdoor learning matters, but you want more structure, confidence, and support, the Outdoor Teaching Bootcamp might be exactly what you need right now. This is a 5-week online foundations course and is the first step in our Outdoor Classrooms Teacher Certification Program. Each week, we focus on one of the 5 phases of teaching outdoors, helping you build a strong, sustainable rhythm for your outdoor classroom. You'll get pre-recorded lessons inside a private portal that you can move through at your own pace, along with 5 weekly live Zoom sessions where we come together to reflect, ask questions, and connect with other educators from all over the country doing this work. If you're curious whether the bootcamp is the right fit for you, I'd love to talk to you. You can schedule a one-on-one discovery call with me, Victoria, and we'll think through it together. Head on over to our website to learn more, or we'll have the link in the show notes as well, and see when the next Outdoor Teaching Bootcamp cohort is opening. Thanks for listening and for the work that you're doing to bring learning back into the relationship with nature. So P.S., if you are a Circle member and you are interested in taking the Outdoor Teaching Bootcamp, you get $100 off the price. So there are huge discounts for joining our Circle membership community. So again, if you have any questions about this, schedule that one-on-one call with me, and I'd be happy to answer any questions. Talk to you soon. Bye.